Microbial Manifesto is brought to you by Group 1 of Microbiology 345's podcast presentation at the University of Wisconsin. For more information regarding Microbial Manifesto or the larger works of our fellow classmates, head over to the course Canvas page at canvas.wisc.edu/courses/395969 or on our website. This is Microbial Manifesto, Episode 1, recorded April 22nd, 2024. I'm Jensen Aaron, and you're listening to the podcast that explores topics worth hearing in the world of microbiology. Before we get started, I would like to take a moment to recognize the wonderful people who made this possible. Many thanks to Jess, Divya, Emily, Katie, and our awesome professor, Carrie Kuhn. Professor Kuhn does work in the Department of Bacteriology in her lab, Vector Biology and Microbiology Lab. For more information, visit kkuhnlab.bact.wisc.edu. So for today's episode, we're going to begin by going back in time. Not too far back, though, as the point I'd like to reference here happens in 2014. And to me, the thought of 2014 being 10 years ago is crazy. But anyways, let's remember a little bit about 2014. Taylor Swift released Shake It Off, Pharrell's Happy, and Katy Perry's Dark Horse battled for the number one spot on the Billboard 100. Most of us listened to music via YouTube or Pandora. Argentina and Germany played in the World Cup final in Rio. But in the best interests of my well-being, we won't delve deeper into that one. So in 2014, I was 10 years old. And the topic of today's podcast is actually quite meaningful to me. So I'll share a brief story with everyone listening. The curtain opens and you see a 10-year-old boy wearing a Leo Messi soccer jersey with hair down to his shoulders that demanded a massive haircut. During September, I commonly find myself in Montauk, New York, where my family goes on vacation. And to this day, Montauk is my favorite place, and I'm so lucky to be able to go there. Anyways, my family of 14, extended, don't worry, is burrowed up on a cloudy day in September in Long Island, watching TV. And on the news was imagery of the dead and dying. And I looked and I saw headlines about Ebola. In my mind, this was a zombie apocalypse, and Ebola terrified me. To this day, I don't know why I was so interested, but my mind was consumed by Ebola. I was going to New York City in a couple days, and for some reason I had watched World War Z with Brad Pitt a few days before this. I don't know why I was 10, but anyways, the apocalyptic outbreak in World War Z happened to begin in New York City, so naturally I shouted to my parents that I wouldn't go to New York City because I didn't want to get Ebola and die. After I cried and was forced to go, Ebola never really left me. And as I got older, I would go on the CDC website and see what was happening. I printed off pages of words that I couldn't understand and got drilled by my mother for using all of her printer ink. She said it was expensive. I thought that Minecraft was the most expensive thing in the world, and I had it. So just a small misunderstanding. But anyways, to be covering a disease with such a pivotal importance to me is awesome. And I thank my team for letting me turn this idea into reality. So if you couldn't guess by now, the topic of today's podcast is going to revolve around Ebola. Now, the history of Ebola actually begins in 1976, but the significance of 2014 will be mentioned and explained further. So Ebola is commonly known as Ebola hemorrhagic fever, coming from the Flociridae family, and from the Ebola virus genes. There are 5 known species of the Ebola virus. If we want to call these variants, that would be the Zaire, which is the most common. Also the Bundibugyo, the Reston, the Sudan, and the Thai forest. And let's begin with like a brief history and introduction to Ebola. So prior to Ebola kind of exploding on a global stage and its grand entrance, in Western media, Ebola lived relatively quietly, at least to us in the United States. And prior to the manifestation of the most significant outbreaks within the storied history of this virus, it was an intermittent predator coming and going. And according to one paper actually written by Jacqueline Weyer and her colleagues, Ebola has been a common name in the Central African region over the course of the last 40 years. Beginning with transmission, we start with a zoonotic origin, meaning this virus was likely the result of an animal. The cause of Ebola virus, or EVD as we can refer to it from now on, is likely to have been fruit fats from the Pteropodiae family. Some of these words are just crazy, so you'll have to forgive me. Infections from bats to humans likely occurred due to the proximity between rural settings and the fruit bats themselves, resulting in the crossover or spillover event. So the first reported cases of Ebola came in 1976 with a weird etiology. The beginning of Ebola as a threat to humankind occurred with two simultaneous outbreaks in the DRC and South Sudan. And the regions of occurrence were approximately 500 miles away from one another. And so the beginning outbreaks included around 600 cases. And in southern Sudan, 53% of people unfortunately died. And in the Democratic Republic of Congo, 88%, which is the second highest fatality rate reported for Ebola in its long history. Ebola, if you didn't know, is regarded as the second most fatal disease to humankind. By percent, not number, second only to rabies. So these two beginning outbreaks brought two different viruses into the picture, both the Zaire and Sudan EVD, as referenced earlier. And one note about these two is that even though they both began harming people at the same time, they are incredibly distinct and have like a very different pathology. So up until 2013, 23 outbreaks of EVD occurred over the 38-year period from its inception, and countries affected include the DRC, Ivory Coast, Uganda, Sudan, and the Republic of Congo. Believe it or not, the Democratic Republic of the Congo and the Republic of the Congo are not the same country. And since 1994, an outbreak of Ebola has been reported almost annually leading up to 2014. So let's quickly stop and reflect. Ebola is one of the most lethal diseases on the planet, and it was occurring almost every year in Africa in some small amount up to 2014. So at this point, Ebola is on the radar of epidemiologists, the CDC, and microbiologists. So there are some questions we need to answer first before we talk about 2018. And that would be, how does Ebola make people sick? How does this sickness get from one to another? What does this fatal sickness look like? Who gets sick? And what happened in 2014? So we know Ebola is in fruit bats. And they're the more likely original host from the virus. And we know that Ebola infects humans. But does Ebola go deeper than just us and bats? And the answer is yes. Ebola has been known to infect chimpanzees, gorillas, monkeys, antelopes, porcupines, humans, and bats. Humans and other mammals are called accidental hosts because the disease is not exactly targeted to us, but we get it anyway. Now, one thing to note here is that we are pretty sure fruit bats were the cause, but we don't know absolutely. And in terms of numbers, the CDC estimates around 35,000 cases in the past four decades. Populations of mammals in regions where Ebola is present have been seen to decline notably and rapidly, primarily with chimpanzee and gorillas. So we know Ebola infects a lot of different animals, but how does it work? So Ebola typically has an incubation period of 2 to 21 days before it manifests itself with symptoms. It activates both the innate and adaptive immune systems, meaning there is both a general and specific plan of attack. This is kind of word vomit, but it's a podcast, so everything is. And on a molecular level, the presence of the virus in the blood results in the release of cytokines, which activates acute phase reactants, which cause cell damage. And the hemorrhagic aspect, meaning the escape of lots of blood, typically, comes from the blood clotting a lot, which damages the liver.
And the virus replicates after entering the host cell, releasing a nucleocapsid into the cytoplasm and then begins to replicate. A VP30 protein activates the DNA transcription and translation so the virus can make more. And it's released from the cell via budding, which causes direct damage to the cell, killing off the host cell itself. So symptoms typically look like fever, headache, diarrhea, vomiting, and if it progresses, eventually multi-organ failure, leading to shock with death shortly after. So we know Ebola is an unforgiving killer. The average fatality rate is around 50%. But depending on the strain, this could be anywhere from 25 to 90%. But this also depends on medical care and other things. So Ebola infects and kills quickly enough so that it cannot be defeated, and it stops cells from reproducing by killing them. Luckily, the continued presence of Ebola does allow us to retract somewhat from the morbid light which the virus is so often connotated with. So Ebola can be cultured and studied with a variety of methods, including PCR, electron microscopy, virus isolation in a cell culture, antigen detection tests, and assays such as the ELISA assay, which stands for a test that is too long and confusing. But no, there are many culturing and studying methods out there that work. And culturing comes from serum or post-mortem tissues, and it's been done with many animals, guinea pigs, humans. And Ebola itself does not get any diseases. And because of advances in culturing and microbial techniques, foundations have been established for characterizing the genome. Two scientists, Sanchez and Feldman, characterized the Ebola genome in the 1980s and 90s, which has helped to influence health initiatives. Research interests include potential treatments, vaccines, long-term side effects, and pathology. And in 2014, Liberia formed PREVAIL, the Partnership for Research on Ebola Virus in Liberia, which has concluded rigorous research and developed two vaccines, the CAD3 EBOS and the RVSV ZEBO. And there is also the ERVABO vaccine that has been made available for those individuals in susceptible areas aged 12 months or older, but this only protects against the Zaire strain. More experimental vaccines have been developed, but their efficacy is yet to be determined truly, and these vaccines are expensive and hard to reach for some people. Over 2,500 publications have been made prior to 2014, with PREVAIL leading the way in research. And over 200 nucleotide and 1,300 protein sequences have been discovered in GenBank up to this point. If you don't know, GenBank is a tool microbiologists use to find what viruses are made of. So now we know what animals and who gets the virus, how the virus works and manifests itself in humans, and we know there are a number of tools that have been created by scientists to fight the disease. So now let's talk about 2014. So this actually starts in December 2013. The initial case was an 18-month-old boy in Guinea who is believed to have been infected by bats. From this initial case, five additional fatal cases occur in the same area. In January 2014, a medical alert was made, and by March, 49 cases and 29 deaths. The WHO officially declared an outbreak. In the following months, the West Africa Ebola epidemic rose to become the largest in history. By July, the outbreak spread to the capitals of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. And for the first time, Ebola had expanded from rural areas into packed urban centers. Ebola is transmitted by contact with blood or bodily fluids, including saliva, sweat, vomit, needles, contaminated clothing or sheets. And the local infrastructure and situational factors contributed to the larger outbreak. Now, in August, the WHO declared the situation a public health emergency of international concern. Ebola later in this outbreak would spread to Italy, Mali, Nigeria, Senegal, Spain, the United Kingdom, and the U.S., and continued for 2.5 years. after 28,600 cases and 11,325 deaths. 11 people were treated in the U.S. On September 30th, 2014, the CDC confirmed the first travel-associated case in the U.S. in a man traveling from West Africa to the U.S. Thomas Eric Duncan unfortunately died over a week later. Two people working with Duncan in Dallas also got sick in the United States, both recovered. And during the height of the disease, the CDC trained 26,655 workers in West Africa on infection prevention and control. In the U.S., more than 6,500 people were trained throughout the response. And in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, 24 new labs were able to test for Ebola by the time the epidemic ended. So what went wrong in 2014, and what can we learn? Following the 2014 outbreaks, the WHO's emergency plans changed, leading to the development of a contingency fund for emergencies. The truth is that the outbreak moves far faster than the money allocated to help the situation in West Africa. And in September 2014, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation committed $50 million to support the scale of Ebola response efforts. After the first American patient was killed from Ebola, the Obama administration allocated $5.4 billion to emergency funding for Ebola in December. Although this was needed funding, and it was good that it was given, questions do come up. So why did it take so long for people in first world countries to respond to the struggles of impoverished nations? Why did someone in the U.S. need to die from Ebola for the people in West Africa to be taken seriously and for their needs to be met? The WHO declared a PHEIC in August, and nothing significant happened until December. Now, a large part of this and the push for funding could be controlled by the U.S. and Western media. So, Ebola was covered around 100 total news stories prior to the first American infection and death. And on September 30th, when Thomas Duncan came home, and in the month that followed, there was over 150 news stories on Ebola every single week. At this point, West Africans had been dealing with Ebola across three countries for almost 6 months, and the news media in the U.S. alarmed Americans and sent them into a state of panic. 85% of respondents to a poll said EVD comes from respiratory droplets like coughing or sneezing, which is incorrect. 32% of news coverage actually included scientific knowledge. So basically, the U.S. started caring when its own people began to get sick, and the news that the media published caused Americans to be completely wrong about EVD in the first place. Now, the only positive is that the media may have pushed for funding, but this funding came at a time when the peak had already happened. Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone lost $2.2 billion in 2015 because of Ebola. Following the outbreak, annual research funding in the U.S. for Ebola went from $35 to $337 million, and the total economic cost of Ebola is estimated to be around $53 billion. Ladies and gentlemen, the world failed to help West Africa in 2014. If this was our response to an epidemic in 2014, what did we think was going to happen in 2020? So we were doomed to fail as a result of a lack of unity, maybe concern for others. And a large part of this outbreak was due to access. People were dying from being in close proximity to one another. People died because there was a lack of clean equipment for health practitioners. Doctors and nurses died because they could not protect themselves. There was no money to be spent for a long time, and people died. Following the 2014 outbreaks, Ebola has remained in smaller numbers. In 2022, Uganda faced an outbreak of the Sudan EVD where 142 cases were reported and 39% of infected people died. Ebola is not extinct, but it is being restrained in lower numbers. In the future and presently, the natural host of Ebola is still a concern. Genomic surveillance is something that will be introduced and is being introduced for tracking Ebola now. And as long as the virus is around, it will continue to change and try to affect the lives of people whose lives cannot afford to be changed. With that, this is all the time that I have with you. And on the bright side of this morbid topic, we are better at international help now than we were 10 years ago. And if luck is on our side, we have been through the pandemic of our lifetimes. This has been Jensen Aaron for the Microbial Manifesto. Thank you and have a wonderful day wherever you are.